Get up, if you're able. The voice was calm and unfamiliar, and it came not from below, but from a little above me. Come now, there isn't much time. Ah, wait, I don't expect you can see me. Is this better? And suddenly it was all I could do to screw my eyes shut against the sudden glare. A woman stood over me, dressed like the other canopy players in all the somber shades of black, dark, extravagantly heeled boots which reached to her thighs, jet-black greatcoat which skirted the ground and rose behind her neck to encircle her head, which was itself englobed in a helmet which was more black openwork than anything solid, like a gauze, with goggles like the faceted eyes of insects covering half her face. What I could see of her face in all this was so pale it was literally white, like a sketch that had never been tinted. A diagonal black tattoo traced each cheekbone, tapering towards her lips, which were the darkest red imaginable, like cochineal. In one hand she held a huge rifle, its scorched energy discharge muzzle pointed at my head, but it did not appear that she was aiming the rifle at me. Her other hand, gloved in black, was reaching out to me. I said you'd better move, Mirabelle, unless you're planning to die here. She knew the building, or at least this part of it. We didn't have far to go. That was good, because locomotion was no longer my strong point. I could just about move along if I allowed one wall to take most of my weight, freeing the injured leg. But it was neither rapid nor elegant, and I knew I would not be able to sustain it for more than a few dozen meters before blood loss or shock or fatigue took their debt. She took me up one flight, intact this time, and then we emerged into the night air. It was a measure of how squalid the last few minutes had been that the air hit my lungs as something cooling and fresh and clean. But I felt myself on the verge of unconsciousness, and still had no real idea what was happening. Even when she showed me a small cable car, parked in a kind of rubble-strewn cave in the building's side, I could not quite adjust my perceptions to accept that I was being rescued. "Why are you doing this?" I asked. "Because the game stinks," she said, pausing to mouth a sub-vocal command at the vehicle, causing it to jerk to life and slink towards us, retracted grapples finding purchase points amongst the dangling debris which covered the cave's ceiling. The gamers think they have the tacit support of the entire canopy, but they don't. Maybe once, when it wasn't quite so barbaric, but not now. I fell into the vehicle's interior, sprawling across the rear seat. Now I could see that my mendicant trousers were covered in blood, like rust, but the bleeding seemed to have stopped, and while I felt light-headed, it hadn't got any worse in the last few minutes. While she lowered herself into the pilot's seat and brought the controls online, I said, "There was a time when this wasn't barbaric?" "Once, yes, immediately after the plague." Her gloved hands took hold of a pair of matched brass joysticks and pushed them forward, and I felt the cable car glide out of the cave with rapid whisking sounds of its arms. The victims used to be criminals. Mulch they caught invading the canopy or committing crimes against their own sort, murderers or rapists or looters. That makes it all right, then. I'm not condoning it, not at all. But at least there was some kind of moral equilibrium. These people were scum, and they were chased by scum. And now? You're talkative, Mirabelle. Most people who've taken a shot like that don't want to do anything except scream. As she spoke, we left the cave, and for a moment I felt sickening freefall as the cable car dropped, before finding a nearby cable and correcting its descent. Then we were rising. "In answer to your question," she said, "there started to be a problem finding suitable victims.